He knows that tigers pounce, but he can't pronounce pounce because he's a fucking child.
Oh, that's so deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that's so deep.
This entire book is one very educated guy saying, this child is so stupid. Listen to all of the stupid things he says and writes. Every choice he makes is the dumb choice of a child, while I, a learned man, write them down and make money.
Hey, y'all.
That's Casey.
Amy's saying I'm down. I don't think I'm down. I think I'm pretty peppy.
No, I believe you. I believe you now. I think
I got pep in my step.
You know, the thing is, I was serving coffee over there all day, so I had like 19 cups.
I think I need more.
Yeah. So I think I'm just like on the ceiling right now is what's happening.
Plus, I had like a big falafel wrap before I came.
Delicious.
And I'm just like...
Did you go to Blue Front?
Yeah, I did.
I love Blue
That's
Front.
What we're having for on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to get a party platter.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. It's going to be nice. Falafel. Hummus.
I know.
Baba Ganesh.
Oh my god, their fucking hummus is so good. Yeah, I love that place. Go to Blue Front. Eat lunch there. Hey, so we're here to talk about Winnie the Pooh. The second show in the history of shows that I've ever missed, and I'm still sad about it.
This was one not to miss. I gotta be honest. The stories were great. The audience was great. A ton of new people.
The Twitter feed was excellent, and I was glued to it all night long. I was not there because my husband's grandfather passed away. Don't cry for me. It's fine. But it was very sad, and it was a really rough week. And we were pretty sure he was going to die the night of shipwreck. So we were just kind of camped outside of our hotel that we were staying in, just like drinking and holding hands and waiting for a phone call while we obsessively refreshed Twitter to look at it, which was really weird. It was a very surreal kind of experience because I was so pumped about the feed and how funny it was and how many people were there and like how much fun everyone seemed to be having and without me. And then on the other hand, we were just like waiting for the phone call. He wound up not dying till Saturday because this is true. It took 5 heart attacks to kill that man. The only reason he finally died is because they took away his ventilator. Like he just would not go. He hung on for 2 days, 2 entire days with blood pressure of 60 over 30.
And I don't think I'm going to make it after I stub my toe.
Thank you. Like, I have no idea how he held on for so long.
Tough.
We spent fully an entire week in that hospital room. So anyway, so thanks to Casey for hosting. I was sad, sad, sad to miss it. But I'm glad that my terrible large adult son exists in the universe without me when I'm not able to be there. And, you know,
I thought that
it was
me for a second.
It was like, no. That doesn't work. You know, never mind.
You said I'm too old to be your adult son.
Yes. By which I mean you are like 10 years older than me.
Great.
Sorry.
Age shamed again.
Oh, is that what I'm doing? Anyway, it was a lovely bright spot in a very hard week. So thanks for entertaining me on the tweets, as always, you guys. And I can't wait to actually listen to this podcast and hear the stories.
Oh, man, it's going to be a treat.
So, yeah, I'm going to be here doing this intro as if I know what I'm talking about. And then we're gonna hear the stories, right?
Yeah.
Did you want to do your quick This is Shipwreck thing?
Oh, this is Shipwreck.
It is.
Which I hope you know because you're listening to this podcast. But just real quickly, we got 6 writers. We assigned them each a character from a book. This time it was Winnie the Pooh.
Because of that horrifying looking Christopher Robin movie.
It looks the worst.
It looks like a horror movie, truly.
Yeah, it does. It's like, I've been looking for you, Christopher Robin.
Why are you under my bed?
We assigned 6 writers. The 6 characters of our choosing from the book and had them write some erotic fan fiction about it. And then we had our favorite local actor, Baruch Porras Hernandez.
Yeah, but he's like an actor. He's like a poet.
Oh, he's all that. We call him an actor because for
insane.
The purposes of this thing, he's like a thespian. He's a performer, an artist, an organizer.
No one works as hard as that dude.
And he can draw really well. He's a great writer.
He's funny
reading
as
his
hell.
Own work is,
he works
great.
A crowd better than anyone I know. I'm constantly in awe of him.
Yeah, like he's whatever Michael Phelps is to water, he's that to people in a room.
To people in a room.
Same thing.
Identical. Okay, that'll do on metaphors. or similes, I guess.
Give me my similes.
Yeah, that's a simile. You're right. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, man. So cool. We did the show, and then, well, let's just get right into it.
And you vote for your fave, and if you win, you get to come back, and that's the whole thing.
Hell yeah.
So we're starting. I mean, I really feel like I do not need to explain who the characters in Winnie the Pooh are. Like, if you don't know who they are, I don't know how to help you. I mean, here's Owl.
Our first story tonight, children, is titled Owl by Myself. Owl was the least loved of a group of forgotten toys. Each of the stuffies in the 100-acre wood had been lost for nearly a century now. Christopher Robin had grown up and left them all behind, and no child had come to claim their magical kingdom. And so each of them had to find a way to live with the loneliness of being a toy nobody played with. Pooh Bear had his irrepressible whimsy, and even Eeyore could take comfort in the fact that he had always felt alone, and now he really was. But Owl had always been overlooked. Nobody came over to let him know when they were getting blown during the blustery day. He was not invited when Pooh got stuck in a knot hole and called a train on himself, screaming, "Oh bother, oh bother, oh bother, fill me up with that salty honey." Owl was at home just packing twigs into his empty nest. Pooh got parties thrown for his birthday where everybody took turns jerking him off into the honey pot. And then everyone would watch Eeyore dunk his sad muzzle into it like the cum dumpster he was. Well, Owl was all fed up with that. He downloaded the Slinky Sluts app for lonely toys and wrote himself a profile that got straight to the point. Mature Owl seeks understanding companionship. Someone I can talk to. And a filthy fuck dolly who knows how to beg for daddy to feather the stuffing out of them. Serious toys only. I don't want to exchange endless Etch-a-Sketch pictures and never really feel your seams between my teeth, please. Can host at my tree in the 108 Wanker Wood. He uploaded his three favorite pics of himself. The one where he was fondling an anesthesia tigger. Tigger has a sleeper fetish. He was into it. The one where he was working out by lifting a stack of books and looking super ripped. And one really, really raunchy close-up of his hot cloaca in action. He felt a little thrill of risk and exposure as he hit yes on that last one. He had never done this kind of thing before. Owl's quick beating little birdie heart jumped in his chest as the notification came through. He had a match and a message. He couldn't wait to see. He read in a fever, his feathers ruffling. I'm a rock hard tyrant lizard who likes to party. Cloaca for cloaca? Owl typed back so fast that his claws flew over the glass. Bring me that scaly strange because I'm ready to eat Jurassic Park, he said. The knock at the door in Owl's treehouse came so quickly he felt like he was in a dream. He fluttered over and opened it up, and in came Rex from Toy Story. They looked into one another's eyes and experienced the instant sexual chemistry that only two cum stains on the gaping toy box of life can share. Why are you here? Asked Owl. Rex said, I've always been the least popular toy in the box. All the attention goes to the cowboy and the spaceman. I just wanted to feel special, you know? Owl knew. He unleashed his pent-up emotional turmoil and beat his wings around Rex, drawing him in. I know what you want, he said. The owl always knows what the lonely little lizard wants. Oh, my Charizard, Rex panted. His voice thick with dinosaur desire. I want you to hit me like a meteor. Fuck me into extinction. Make me extinct. Owl flexed his talons and mounted the king of the dinosaurs, finding his sensitive plastic cloaca and lining it up against his own. He hooted in Rex's ear. Whoo. Whoo. Who is your daddy? Who is your daddy? Rex cried out in taboo pleasure, bucking his massive tail and emitting his pre-recorded roar. Oh, daddy's coming, Owl moaned, coughing up a pellet of Barbie bones and My Little Pony hair. But Rex heard Andy's coming and hit the floor motionless as the plaything he was meant to be. Owl was like, He stared at the still form, his orgasm utterly ruined. Well, this won't do, he said. He checked his phone again. Another message had come in. Hey, I don't know how you feel about this, but we're a chill couple looking to have a good time with an open-minded toy in the neighborhood. No pics, we're too well known. Invite us over and we'll show you why. Owl texted back. I'm stuffed with fluff and down to fuck. Come on over and I'll let you climb my tree. Owl covered Rex up with a quilt and stood, tapping his claws, waiting for the knock at the door. When it came, it was soft and felted. He pulled the knob, and there stood two rag dolls with bright, flaming red hair. Trick or treat, they said in unison. I'll take both of you, he said, and they toddled in. So, what brings you here? They shrugged in creepy unison. Nobody remembers us, they said. They can't figure out if we're brother and sister or boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever, said Raggedy Andy, I think. Yeah, so we spent some time in the island of misfisted toys, but, you know, that got hella old, said Raggedy Ann, I think. There's nothing wrong with us. We're just underappreciated right now. I'm hoping for some sort of greedy reboot, you know? The two dolls were absently stroking one another's red yarn hair. Anyway, you seem like you understand what that's about, Raggedy Ann was staring at Owl with an unnameable hunger. Oh, I do, said Owl, his beak snapping shut with a sudden spasm. With a ragdoll jump, Andy moved into Owl's lap, patting Owl's genitals with his swollen hand. Anne circled behind Owl and laid her mitts on the crest of his wings. How are you at multitasking? Owl answered that question by swiveling his head around 180 degrees and pushing his beak under Raggedy Ann's skirt. He worked his dry, gray tongue against the folds of her linty vulva. That's right, linty vulva. Searching for her plush clit. I was created back when they didn't believe in such things, she told him. But don't stop, don't stop. I want to feel your misery deep in my aging stuffing. Andy had dropped to his jointless knees before the venerable avian. He was working his big button eyes against Owl's cloaca, clicking and clacking and snicking and snacking. Give me what I want, big boy. Owl felt a terrible pressure building inside him. He felt himself bearing down, pushing on the biggest, most solid lump of pleasure he had ever felt. He was hooting and hooting so loud that he didn't even know the sound of his own voice. He saw visions of heffalumps and wazzles, all spectacularly hung. He dreamed he was a little black rain cloud just hovering over the honey tree while Pooh wept dejectedly and forgotten, eaten by moths. Raggedy Ann leaned forward and whispered in his ear, "You're my favorite," she said. "I'll never forget you. I'll pass you on to the next generation when our time is done." And only Raggedy Ann could have known such an exquisite, perfect way to say exactly what Owl had always wanted to hear. He pushed a perfectly formed egg out of his all-peeing, all-pooping bird hole. It felt like it was splitting him in two. The pain and the pleasure were one, and he was a perfect being, transcendent, a toy in the hands of a benevolent god. The end.
That was Owl, as written by Meg Ellison. Rabbit, I gotta say that I gave a little description of Rabbit where I was just like, I don't know, but he acts like he's kind of an asshole, but really he just keeps a clean house and tries to keep it stocked for guests. And
so true.
Everybody flipped out. They were like, "He's the worst."
What, really?
And I'm like,
imagine having opinions that strong about Winnie the Pooh characters.
I don't remember him being, I mean, I feel like I remember him being worse than he was. When I was reading the book, I was like,
he's just like particular.
Fine.
It's like he's got his ways. That's all. He reminds me of my dad. He's just like, no, don't put that there.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, I think it's because I identify with him. I'm like, please just use a fucking coaster.
Right. Thank you.
Don't get your head stuck
like
in my
we have
honey
the Indian. This is like a coaster, and they put it next to the coaster. I'm like, guys, I put a coaster there because I knew you were going to put your fucking drink down.
Our next story, children, is titled Rabbit's Sunday Stroll. The sun was shining in the 100-acre wood. The trees turning for autumn were various shades of orange and red. Rabbit was on his Sunday afternoon stroll, enjoying the crisp fall air and the faint scent of baking apples coming from Kanga's house. "What's a stroll, Piglet?" Winnie the Pooh asked. It's a bit like a walk, I think," Piglet said. "But, you know, more British." Rabbit's favorite time of the week was his Sunday stroll, as he would wander into the woods, surrendering to their beauty, and while deep in the majesty of the forest, would jack off into an old stump. Rabbit took great pleasure in the joke of it, planting his seed, get it? He'd been taking these promenades for as long as he could remember, which was not very far back at all, but no matter. He was halfway to his masturbation stump when Rabbit noticed he was not alone in the forest. Someone else was in the clearing with him, coming out behind a large oak tree. And then it became two someones. As they came into the sunshine, Rabbit observed that one of the someones was a very tall bear and a rather tall hat. It was somewhere between a bowler and a top hat, Rabbit thought. Though he knew very little about hats. Didn't wear one often. The very tall bear in the rather tall hat was wearing overalls and no shoes. The other someone was also a bear and was also wearing a hat. This bear was not quite so tall and was wearing a nightcap and dressing gown, which was weird. The nightcap and gown were a lovely blue with white dots. The bears had not noticed Rabbit. "I think we're lost, Papa Bear," the bear in the nightcap said. "I do hope Brother and Sister Bear will be all right until we get home." "Nonsense," said the very tall bear in the rather tall hat insisted. "I know exactly where we are, Mama Bear. Don't you fret." "Excuse me," Rabbit said, clearing his throat a little. "But who are you?" "Oh, hello there," the bear called. Papa said, "I didn't see you there. We're the Berenstain Bears. Stain Bears. Who are you?" "Wouldn't it be Berenstain?" Rabbit wondered, his whiskers twitching slightly. "Oh, well, not in this timeline," Mama Bear said. "That's the other timeline." "Do you even live in this forest?" Rabbit had never seen them before. "I think we took a wrong turn somewhere. We live in Bear Country, which is somewhere over that hill," Papa said. "Where is this?" "You're in the 100-acre wood. A fair bit ways from Bear Country, I'm afraid," Rabbit said, losing interest in the conversation. He was rather horny, and it was giving him quite the bother, as Pooh would say. He was late for his stump and pump. Oh, I heard this part of the woods is quite dangerous, Mama Bear said. No, not anymore. It's gentrified now, Rabbit said. Scariest thing around here, honey, is when Tigger insists of singing karaoke. Rabbit's boredom intensified with the sturdiness of his cock. What brought you to this part of the forest, anyway?
Well, we heard there were certain clubs where couples could go in order to, you know, socialize, Papa Bear said, and looked Rabbit up and down before smiling and then saying, and you know, have blueberry pancakes.
Mama Bear giggled and blushed as much as a fur-covered bear could blush.
Ooh, do you know where we could get some blueberry pancakes?
Rabbit had heard of these pancake clubs popping up in other parts of the wood where couples could indulge in sticky, sweet pleasures. Well, we don't have establishments quite like that around here, Rabbit said, getting an idea. But at my burrow, I have the fixings for a batch of blueberry pancakes.
Oh, are your pancakes scrumptious? Papa Bear asked, his voice lowering to a sultry growl.
Oh, they're quite excellent, the best in this part of the forest. Would you like to sample my wares? Rabbit twitched his ears seductively. They twitched in a way that said, come eat my pancakes, Daddy. Mama Bear, feeling thoroughly left out, said, do you have enough for three? Of course, girl, Rabbit said, admiring Mama Bear's glossy fur and her ample curves. There's plenty for everyone. Rabbit hadn't even closed the door before Mama was ripping off her depression bathrobe, revealing six pert, succulent nipples. She gave a full shake of her round, furry ass. Papa Bear moaned in approval, and Rabbit imagined her moaning as he clamped his teeth onto one of her nipples and dangling there. Mama arched her back and presented both her asshole and slick honey pot to her captive audience.
Piglet, what's a vagina? Pooh asked.
I'm not sure, Pooh, but I do want to put my mouth on it, Piglet said. Rabbit was so aroused, his whole body tingled from the tip of his nose to the poof of his tail.
So tell me, Rabbit, Papa Bear began, unbuttoning his overalls, how long can you hold your breath?
As long as it takes, big boy, Rabbit said. His ears and nose twitched rapidly. Papa Bear grabbed Rabbit by his back paws and inserted him into Mama Bear's jam jar. She moaned and bucked her hips as Rabbit's ears vibrated against her bare G-spot. Rabbit stuck out his tongue so he could lick the walls of her cunt. They tasted like apple crisp and honeysuckle. It was delicious. His cock kept slamming against her clit as Papa roughly pushed him in and out of Mama Bear. With every slap, he became harder and harder, getting closer and closer to the edge. Rabbit felt the something pushing against him in Mama's love channel. Her walls squeezed around him, and from the muffled noises he heard, he discerned that Papa had worked himself into Mama's other entrance. The head of Papa's cock ground through Mama's sugar walls and rubbed against him. Rabbit was impressed with the size of Papa's erection, as he was used to fucking Pooh, who was a bear of very little cock. Rabbit twisted himself and began to suck at the spot where Papa's cock head was through the skin, sticky layers of Mama Bear's berry bush everywhere. Mama came first because feminism. Her butter churn contracted around Papa Bear's 100-acre wood and Rabbit's body suffocating him with pleasure. Papa pulled Rabbit out of Mama's creamy center with a loud pop. Papa snaked his long tongue into Rabbit's asshole, working his snout in so that Rabbit stretched and moaned. Papa
face fucked Rabbit's asshole, moving in and out slowly and then faster, nudging Rabbit's prostate with his snout. Rabbit ground his ass into Papa's face. Then Papa started to feel a bit of a tickle in his nose, probably a stray bit of Rabbit's tail. But before he could extract his nose from Rabbit's tight carrot cake, he sneezed. A big achoo. And Rabbit was shot across the room like a champagne cork. He flew through the open window over the carrot patch, spraying cum as he crash landed into Eeyore's house. Oh, dear Piglet, Pooh said as they approached the pile of sticks that had once been Eeyore's house. Was this the work of a heffalump, do you think? I don't think so, Pooh. I think it was the work of a heffa-hump. The end.
And that was Rabbit. Rabbit was written by Lauren Parker.
I feel like we had like a cast of ringers for this one, which is the other reason I was sad to miss it, because they're funny. Hey, so we got Pooh up next, whose face graces the back of our voting cards, looking very surprised at all the terrible things that are happening to him. He's the bear guy.
He's the main guy.
He doesn't wear pants.
He's the titular Pooh.
The titular Pooh.
Our last story before the break, children, is titled A Buzzin' Day. Yeah. 6 a.m. I am awake too early because there's a man yelling in ecstasy for my promiscuous neighbor, Lottie. Lottie! Lottie! He moans. Lottie is a busty redhead cam girl who I can hear at any and all hours of the day telling Big Dick 34 or Come to Daddy 82 what she'll do to them. I've watched her channel before out of curiosity, but I'm not really into cam girls. 8 a.m. I lie awake for a while doing nothing in particular or trying to make a plan for the day. Think, 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 I tell myself. I text Tigger to see what he's up to. He has ADHD and is always bouncing off the walls first thing in the morning, so I know he'll be up. My stomach is rumbling, and of course I want honey. That's all I can think about. I have a sugar addiction like most of America, but anyway. I text Tigger. Yo, what up, my Tigga? Tigga responds, what did I tell you about saying that, buddy bear? Sorry, Tigger, what are you up to? Let's go get some honey, man. Where? 100 Acre Wood? Did you text Piglet? No, he was out late with Rabbit. Well, I'm ready to bounce when you are. Bounce where? To the woods, Pooh. You just said it. It was your idea. Sorry, I annoyed you with my friendship, Tigger. 12 p.m. I'm awake from a couple of hours nap and starving. I really need something sweet. Text Tigger to come over so we can get hopping. Tigger runs into my neighbor Lottie in the hall on the way up and asks her when she's going to let him eat her out. Bye, Tigger, Lottie bemoans as she keeps on walking. I want to eat you, he shouts. I love you so much. Tigger, I want to eat too, I say. You're too fucking jumpy for her anyway. I laugh at my stupid little laugh, and he tells me we need to pick up his Ritalin prescription on the way to the woods. 2 p.m., we arrive at 100 Acre. I remember seeing a hive in the scary-looking tree outside Owl's house last week, so we head over. I ask Tigger to hop up there and see if there's anything left. Suddenly, Owl's door flies open. Tigger, you cocksucking nutter, get down from there! Oh wait, Owl is British. Tigger, you cocksucking nutter, get down from there! He invites us in. I have to squeeze my fat self through Owl's tiny front door. Tigger bounces through the upstairs window, proclaiming that that's what tiggers do best for some fucking reason. I ask Owl if he has any honey. Owl claims his honey is only for tea, but if I do him a little favor, he'll let me have a mason jar full of it. Think, 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 I mutter. What on earth could he want? Then I remember. Owls bribed me with honey for sexual favors before. It tends to get very messy, though, and I leave with feathers glued to the bad place. Owl's beak has also nipped too hard in the past, so now I only let him, like, caress me with the soft part of his wings. Our safe word is bees. 2:15 p.m. My feathered friend goes upstairs to check on Tigger, who is bouncing on his tail and singing a song about being the only Tigger and a wonderful, well, and like other shit that he always says. And he just keeps saying, fun, 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 like a maniac. What the hell is up with that guy? I scoot a chair up against the kitchen cupboards and wiggle onto the counter so I can reach the top shelf where Owl keeps the good stuff. Oh boy, I exclaim, because I'm just a silly old bear. One drop, then another. Oh yeah, then another goes in my mouth. But I just can't contain myself. I gulp down the rest of the jar so that the honey is slathered all over my face, hands, red crop top, protruding sexy belly. And boy, am I in silly bear heaven. And then I accidentally let the jar crash into the ground. 2:30 p.m. Owl flutters back into the kitchen and pretends to scold me over the mess. I was a bad bear. I make a faux attempt to exit, but of course, oh no, I'm stuck in Owl's tiny owl door with my very full tummy and ass sticking right out. Only a big release will set this bear free. And Owl Daddy knows what to do. He starts slowly teasing me from behind, and I squirm with delight. Oh yes, Owl, feather me, Daddy. Do it, bitch, I cry out. I am inching forward with every flick, but Owl knows I'll need a big jump to get unstuck. He lifts a rolling pin from the counter. I know he doesn't have hands, so just play along here, okay? He lifts a rolling pin from the counter and runs it through my legs and up to my belly where the honey has drizzled down from my earlier escapade. He coats it thoroughly and slides it back between my thighs and begins tracing my bad place. I'm titillated as he thrusts the honey-coated wood inside me. I briefly wonder when was the last time Owl made us a pie. Because I'm a silly bear that like that. Boing, boing, sound effect. It's Tigger bouncing towards the door tailed by a swarm of honeybees. Oh, bother, I mutter. Hurry, Owl, I moan. Owl thrusts the pin deeper and deeper until I finally release out the door, that is. You all right, buddy bear? Inquires Tigger, but the bees are moving closer to my honey-covered nipples and bum. Still, a bit weak in the knees, I clamber up on all fours, but I'm too late. The bees attack, starting with my nipples, as they work around the back. This has happened before. Owl and Tigger look on in horror. But little do they know, I enjoy moderate pain after I climax. If I was home alone, I'd be pinching my own nipples and thighs with honey-coated paws. But today, the bees do it for me. 2:30 p.m. Show's over. I'm exhausted and my bee stings have made me blow up like a balloon. Owl hoos me off upstairs to get some rest. 5 p.m., I hear Piglet and Rabbit at the door. Owl, have you seen Pooh? Piglet inquires. Oh, he's upstairs resting, says Owl. We had quite the afternoon, he adds with a smirk. But come in, boys, he says mischievously while holding the sticky rolling pin. I was just about to make us some pie. The end.
That was Winnie the Pooh, as written by Maya Janelle.
Who's the first-time writer who came through Baruch, and I was sad to miss her. We got Eeyore up next. He's the sad guy with the tail. On this voting card that I'm using as a reference for the order of characters, there's a drawing of Eeyore with a speech bubble that says, nobody wants the D. So I'm assuming that's pretty good lead into what's about to happen.
I forgot about that line.
Our, what is this, fourth story tonight, children, is titled The Orgy at Pooh Corner. Gather round, children. This is a story about Eeyore, the emoest little thought in the 100 Wankers Wood.
And like most stories about Eeyore, it begins with a brief interlude about poo. Because I know you greedy little tots can't get enough of that amnesiac bear and his honey addiction. He's a hot mess and you love it. This whole series is just Hoarders meets Celebrity Rehab, Muppet Babies edition. Anyway, let's begin. One day when Pooh Bear had no one else to screw, he thought he would screw someone rather than staying home and rubbing one out into an empty honey pot. For all his honey pots were filled to the brim with jizz already, just in case Pooh should feel the urge for a smackerel of something tasty. So Pooh threw on a shirt and no pants because he was a shirt-cocking slut. And he went around to Piglet's house, greased himself up with condensed milk and honey, and got himself dick deep in Piglet's tight pink asshole. Like you do. And while he was grunting and thrusting, a hum came suddenly into his head, and it went like this. The more my dick tiddly tick is hard and thick, tiddly tick, the more pig's ass tiddly tass goes schlick, schlick, schlick. That's a very pretty hump, Pooh, said Piglet, slipping off of Pooh schlong. Well, nothing makes a bear blow his load more than praising his poetry. That's true. That's true. Come by after the show, wink, wink. And Pooh nodded all over Piglet's face. Pooh found Piglet's cum-glazed muzzle so inspiring he began to compose a second verse to his hum. The more I come, tiddly pum, but Piglet, who was wiping linty bear jizz off of his cheeks, got some in his ear and missed the rest of the poem. You know, Pooh, said Piglet stickily, maybe everyone would appreciate your hum. Perhaps we should go, you know, find Eeyore. Eeyore would appreciate it. So we should, like, go find him and sing it to him. No, thank you, came a gloomy voice from beneath them. Pooh and Piglet looked down to discover that they had been fucking on Piglet's splotchy futon. But no, it wasn't his splotchy futon. It was Eeyore. They had been fucking on top of Eeyore's body, which was exactly the same color for some reason. Oh, Baba. Hello, Eeyore. We didn't see you there, said Pooh. Don't mind me, said Eeyore. Some days you're on top, and others you're on the bottom. Eeyore sighed. Except for me, I'm always on the bottom. Would you be in the mood to try something different? Asked Pooh. I would, said Eeyore, rolling dolefully onto his back. Pooh pounced on the donkey dick like a jaguar falling out of a tree. He guzzled that great, great gray sausage, stuffing his rumbly teddy bear tummy with thick, thick dick, which is exactly the mistake that earned your humble author a lifetime ban from the Build-A-Bear Workshop. I would like to be on top someday, said Eeyore, ignoring Pooh's heroic schlong-swallowing efforts. But I never am. Nobody wants the D. And D is short for donkey. Which is me. That's silly. I want the D, said Pooh, except his mouth was so full of Eeyore's twitching stud sausage that it came out more like, but everybody wants your D, Eeyore, said Piglet.
who had gone around politely behind Pooh and whose fist was now stuck wrist deep in Pooh's velveteen ass. Just exactly like a well-fed bear trying to leave a rabbit's cozy warren. You're hung like a horse.
Everyone likes horses, said Eeyore glumly, but nobody likes donkeys.
Pooh had gotten to the point where Eeyore's nutsack was literally playing footsie with his uvula. So he felt that this was a little unfair.
And my tail is missing, said Eeyore.
Piglet extricated himself from Pooh's pooter with a powerful pop and scooted himself under Eeyore. For Piglet was a small animal and could often reach where others could not.
May I look for your tail, Eeyore? Said Piglet.
You may, said Eeyore.
Piglet's eyes gleamed just exactly like shiny little buttons, and his nose quivered with all of the skills he had learned in his truffle hunting days, which is a euphemism for a sexual subcommunity too shocking to mention here. Though if anyone wearing a mushroom lapel pin asks you to join them for brunch, make sure to bring your own lube, latex overcoat, and kazoo. Piglet began searching for Eeyore's missing tail, rapidly rimming his way around the donkey's asshole. Get it, asshole? it's all right here, folks. So fast that he made himself thoroughly dizzy.
And even if you do find my tail, I'll still be homeless, said Eeyore.
Pooh, whose whole noggin was at this point solidly skewered on Eeyore's mule meat, glanced guiltily in the direction of his new sex swing, which he had made out of branches he had found in a sort of house-like shape in a location he now remembered was Eeyore's address. Whoopsies!
And worst of all, said Eeyore, sighing with either sexual gratification or perhaps ennui, it's my birthday.
It's your birthday, exclaimed Piglet. The combination of Piglet's sputter on Eeyore's pucker and Pooh playing scales on Eeyore's pecker with his larynx finally caused the poor donkey to erupt. A bucket of jizz as bitter as black coffee and as sad as an unsolicited dick pic poured into Pooh's throat, stomach, and unfortunately lungs. Everyone spasmed, hee-hawing sadly, sounding for all the world as though Netflix had removed his favorite miniseries mid-binge. His buttocks spasm and clenched repeatedly, slapping Piglet's face like a cymbal-banging monkey toy, just going hog wild as the bass dropped and the percussion section got it so low.
Nothing ever happens on my birthday, said Eeyore when he finally caught his breath from his sexual, though not yet narrative, climax.
We must do something nice for you, Eeyore, said Pooh.
When people try to be kind, it only leads to trouble, said Eeyore.
But Pooh wasn't listening because he had already turned on the orgy announcement. The orgy announcement was a little bit of string that had the word orgy written on it. R-G-E-E, orgy. What you did was you pulled a string which wound through pulleys and branches and that one rock that really looked like a cock and balls, it really did, until it finally reached some distant part of the 100 Wankers Wood where it was attached to the tail of Tigger. And the string would pull on the tail of Tigger, which would pull on the rest of Tigger, setting off a series of bounces so powerful that they would bounce every single creature in the 100 Wankers Wood to Pooh's house. And so, in not very many minutes at all of the animals in the wood burst through Pooh's door together, squeezing the poor door just as wide as it could go.
All this fuzz for me? Said Eeyore, and there was the tiniest tinge of happiness underneath his normally gloomy demeanor.
But children, this is a true story. Not some sort of soothing lie cooked up to send you to bed warm, happy, and ignorant of the harsh ways of the world. The sad fact is, the orgy was not really for Eeyore at all. It had been called on the occasion of Eeyore's birthday, but as soon as all the animals got there, they paid Eeyore no mind at all and fell into their ordinary patterns. Kanga and Tigger bounced up towards the ceiling, enjoying their mashed-up mommy-slash-feeder fetish. As Kanga forced spoonfuls of medicine into Tigger's mouth and then stuffed his entire face into mommy's pouch. Owl made Rabbit write lines on the blackboard, spanked him for misspelling, and then trussed Rabbit up like a trapped hare and disgorged a pellet into Rabbit's pouting, eager mouth. Pooh and Piglet kept gratifying each other and themselves in that self-indulgent way old married couples do at an orgy, you know, where it's like, okay, this is an orgy, like either share or get a fucking room, okay? Those couples exist. You're like, are you guys going to do anything to anyone else or just really just going to be in that corner? Have fun. And throughout all of this, Eeyore was reduced once again to the status of sex furniture. Poor fucking Eeyore. He just lay there, moaning sadly. Until one of Tigger's bounces knocked him right off the page. Don't mind me, said Eeyore. Not even at my own orgy. I'll just be outside with the rest of the rubbish. And he wandered outside into the alley and sat down next to a trash can. Poor me, said Eeyore. Hey, came a voice from inside the can. Keep it down! I'm sleeping in here! The lid of the trash can popped up and an unfamiliar face emerged. He had green fur and a brown unibrow and big eyes and a wide Muppety mouth. And yes, it was indeed Oscar the Grouch. Don't pay me no notice, said Eeyore sadly. Hey, said Oscar. What's got you down? All my friends ignored me, and it was my own birthday orgy. Those guys ought to be ashamed. Oscar the Grouch shook his fist in the air. Eeyore stared at it. Oscar's fist, fluffy and floppy, green, tangled, and felted, was the most beautiful fist Eeyore had ever seen in his whole ass life. Eeyore turned pink from the tip of his nose to the empty spot where his tail had been. Dumbstruck, he flounced around and then pushed his haunches up in the direction of Oscar's trash can, wiggling his bottom and hoping his meaning was clear. Fortunately, you don't spend your sexually formative years in the dirty back alleys of Sesame Street without learning what it looks like when a fuzzy children's toy needs a whole lot of fist all the way up its rear. And after establishing verbal consent, Oscar plunged his furry starfish all the way up Eeyore's sad hole. He went for a righteous rummage through the donkey's innards until suddenly he found something hard. Hey, is this your prostate, sad boy? He asked. He turned the hard thing over, prodding it. Ouch! It wasn't just hard, it was sharp. Oscar yelped and yanked his fist back out of Eeyore's asshole. There was a shiny chrome tail stuck in a nail. It was a nail stuck in Oscar's hand, and attached to the nail was Eeyore's missing tail. Yay! Oh, that's where it went. He suddenly remembered that a few days before, he had gotten a package in the mail. His custom-made extra-large horse dildo, Secretariat Secret, had been very fun. Eeyore had spent all day pistoning that silicone fire hose up his own ass shaft. He must have pushed the tail in as well. You know, Eeyore said, there's something I like to do with that tail of mine. Oh, yeah, said Oscar. I am a choke slut, said Eeyore. And Oscar was into it. And so, after some very careful discussions about safety procedures and going slow and communicating clearly, for breath play is not a joke, people, even if you're a stuffed toy and don't actually need to breathe. So they went for it. Oscar wrapped Eeyore's tail in his flappy hands and pinioned Eeyore's back against his trash can, and Eeyore frantically jacked off with his squishy little hoofs, and Oscar frottaged the inside of his can and said things that were far too dirty to repeat in a children's story. But it sounded a lot like, yeah, take it, you sad fucking boy, take it. This continued until both of them came. Oscar's jizz was runny and brown and smelled like the water that collects in the bottom of the trash can. And Eeyore's jizz, which normally was sour and sad, this time was sweet and delicate, and little flowers grew up where it landed. When Pooh was halfway through a pony play scene with Kanga and Rabbit, the clopping of pretend hooves reminding him that Eeyore was missing. So Pooh walked out into the alleyway to look for him in the alley, and there he saw Eeyore curled up at the base of Oscar's trash can, sleeping peacefully, his lost and found tail draped around his neck like a choker, and little bunches of jizz flowers sprouting all around him. Oh, I guess Eeyore did have a very happy birthday after all, said Pooh, and so he had. The end.
That was Eeyore, as written by the horrible Heffelhump.
It's okay. Well, we didn't assign a Heffelhump, did we?
No.
I guess we just went with the A-team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get really out there.
Hey, we got Kanga up next, who is the adult of the jumping ones. What are they called?
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos, thank you.
It's in the name.
Yeah, you're right. Please kill me. When will death come?
Sweet release.
Our next story, children, is titled, Any Hole is a Goal. Rabbit was a classic country faggot. He just wanted to wear his sun hat, raise some gay carrots, and every few weeks slip off to the city for a roll around with some Puerto Rican jackrabbit who wouldn't give him half a lumps. But today was a very blustery day indeed. Frantically, he'd collected all his prized carrots so they wouldn't blow away and sat in his burrow with the door barred. Outside, the bluster began blustering harder. Rabbit was glad he was safe inside, but hoped the storm was bringing the other residents of the 100-acre wood great misfortune. Rabbit's alarmingly obvious anxiety and need for a militant spring cleaning day had strained his relationships. But he'd began self-medicating recently, and boy howdy did Rabbit love to throw back some CBD oil. Put on a face mask and masturbate with a carrot up his Easter basket. He decided to do just that when he heard a loud knock on his door. Well, well, who could that be? Rabbit said nervously to his empty, lonesome house. The home did not respond. The knocker, probably a fearsome creature, knocked again. This time, louder. He did not want to open the door to whatever beast was on the other side, but did it anyway to further the plot. Because he only ate carrots, Rabbit suffered from several serious vitamin deficiencies. But his vision was incredible. So he knew at once that the surprise guest was Kanga, his dearest and closest friend, which is to say, Kanga knew Rabbit's name. A guest! Rabbit squealed and ran, slipping doilies under things. Oh dear, Kanga said, hopping safely inside from the storm. She shivered because she was cold, not because she was turned on. It's such a blustery day, she said, while Rabbit ran to make her tea. Did Rue blow away in the storm? Rabbit asked, hopefully. Who? Kanga said, sitting at his table. Rabbit added a carrot to the hot water because he thought that's what tea was. You know, your son, Roo, your son, Roo. Kanga took a swig of the carrot water without flinching. Listen, buddy, all kangaroos look the same to me. And I have like 6 roos, okay? And I can have 6 of them at once, so I can't keep track of all my sons and their little names, okay? Kanga dug around in the same pouch she incubated her infants in and pulled out a lit spliff. Cool if I smoke in here? Kanga said, already blowing smoke rings. You wouldn't happen to have any Febreze in there, Rabbit said like a nervous little bitch. Bitch, I can't even find my keys in this thing, Kanga jiggled her pouch belly. Rabbit's long ears could hear mini wine bottles, house keys, and some emergency tampons jiggle deep within. My favorite eyeliner is in there somewhere, said Kanga. I'm thinking about having another baby just so it'll find it for me, you know? Rabbit found himself relaxing in the presence of such a self-assured lady kangaroo and absentmindedly nibbled on a carrot. See, at least you keep your things together, not like everyone else in this forest, Rabbit said. Ah, I know what you mean, Kanga took a drag. Owl has far too many books for someone who can't concentrate long enough to finish a sentence. And his house has so many dead carcasses that I thought it was a Beanie Baby collection. Oh, I know, disgusting, Rabbit said, understanding. Kanga put her spliff out in her teacup and smiled at Rabbit. It felt nice to complain to someone who actually listened. She reached across the table and squeezed his hand. Rabbit gasped and gently stroked Kanga's hand with his carrot. Kanga shivered, this time because she was turned on. And Piglet, he's so whiny, started Rabbit. Yeah, Kanga moaned a little. And he's like had an unrequited crush on Pooh since like we were first published in like 1926. Rabbit said, he was so annoyed. He was so hornied. Like, take a hint, Piglet, Kanga said. Did you know the lines on his body are for how far up he's taken a fist? He's more of a hand puppet than a stuffed animal, Rabbit said. Rabbit lowered the carrot he'd been slobbering on and slipped it up his bunny box. Kanga lifted the carrot from her tea and began rubbing it against her neck luxuriously. Kanga and Rabbit nervously locked eyes as they realized they had something more erotic than sex. They hated all the same people. Rabbit picked up another carrot and chewed it into 2 tiny stalks as he continued to gossip. I went over to Tigger's, and I have not seen that much coke since I used to rent out my bussy on a Miami club promoter. Rabbit stuck the slim carrots into his nostrils with a nasally moan. Kanga groaned and pushed the wet tea carrot into her pouch, then 2, then 3 increasingly dry carrots. And Eeyore, I love that he's so kinky, but when he's getting his tail nailed in by a gopher, I don't want to hear it, you know, Kanga said. Rabbit did know, and he started working another carrot into his ass, seeing how deep his rabbit hole really went. I'm like pretty sure I'm a mother or something, Kanga said. I shouldn't have my children, whatever their names are, hearing Eeyore braying, disappoint me, daddy, every night. Kanga slowly slipped a carrot into each of her ears, 2 more in her nostrils. She and Rabbit wanted to be plugged like sinking ships. And Winnie the Pooh, Rabbit began. They both groaned with frustration and pleasure. Their hatred for Pooh made the room a sauna, made Kanga's pouch a swamp.
Who the fuck wears more clothes to bed than they do the rest of the day? Rabbit said. Who the fuck does that? His ears were now plugged too. Why does the character with the fewest dimensions and brain cells get the titular role? Kanga massaged her breasts, which were also inside her pouch. Oh, bitch, did you say titular? Yes, bitch. She lifted her tail and slipped a carrot into her Kanga boost. And the fucking honey gluttony? He only eats honey, but you'll never hear him talk about the issues surrounding colony collapse. Kanga thrust the ass carrot right into her down under. It was too much. Not caring about bees made poo too despicable, too disgusting, too easy to loathe. They started hopping up and down, angry, horned up, about to explode. It's as if Rabbit could barely catch his breath as he pushed a thin-sounding carrot up his urethra, the final hole. It's as if he doesn't care about the world's number one pollinator. All at once, their eyes seethed with rage, and their orifices exploded with carrot juice. Oh, bother! They both screamed. What the fuck is this? Both of them were leaking onto the floor and the table. Carrot juice pooled in Kanga's pouch and Rabbit's sun hat. The two animals were exhausted and satisfied by their rage catharsis. They fell to the table and brought their panting mouths together for a respectful platonic kiss. And you know what else? Said Rabbit. You won't stay out of my garden. Working himself up for round two. But that is a story for another time. The end.
And that was Kanga as written by Joe Wadlington, last month's winner and the month prior to that.
And finally we have Tigger, because you have to have Tigger. You cannot have Tigger. There would have been riots outside of the store if we had not had Tigger. Tigger, I feel like, is the one that has a lot of bad tattoos. And every time I have a tattoo of Hobbs from Calvin and Hobbes on my foot, and every time someone asks me if it's Tigger, I know I'm talking to a bad person. It doesn't look anything like Tigger.
Our last story, children, is titled The Most Wonderful Thing About Tiggers. The sun sat high overhead as Tigger scratched lazily at a soft mound of sand in the sandy pit. He sounded like an idling engine as his guttural purrs rolled rhythmically from his throat. He stirred, his striped haunches were taut, his tail erect, his eyes rolling back into their sockets. He was almost, Tigger! A voice shot out like a thunderclap, jolting him out of his biscuit-making ecstasy. You better not be shitting in the sandy pit again. Don't do it, Tigger. Little Roo plays there. Tigger's eyes met Kanga's disapproving eyes. Oh, no, Miss Kanga. Defecorating is not what Tiggers do best. No way. It's not defecorating, you fucking idiot. It's defecating. Defecating. Ugh. And why do you insist on calling me Miss or Mrs. Kanga? Do you see a Mr. Kanga anywhere around here? Have you ever? A bear? Sure. A pig? Yeah. Even an owl? You bet. A donkey? Got that, too. But my husband? She kept laughing, though, and I carried off into the branches overhead,
echoing with a Bronte-like loneliness. Tigger thought like his tail, long and hard, and realized for the first time that, oh my stripes, there really was no Mr. Kanga, or Papa Roo, or whatever he was. Does that mean you're an orphan, not Mrs. Kanga? My God, you're a fucking idiot, she said, and with a whip of her tail, Kanga was gone. Tigger, still a bit perplexed, decided to dig a hole in the sandy pit and take a shit in it. He covered it up for the next 5 minutes while he tried to make sense of what just happened. He always did his best thinking this way. Kanga had always been like a mother to Tigger ever since he arrived in the Hundred Acre Wood. She opened her home to him and her pantry. She trimmed his claws and cleaned his ears and let him bounce indoors. Lately, though, things had changed. Sure, when Christopher Robin came around, it was all sunshine and daisies. But when it was just the animals, boy, was she... Oh, what did Rabbit say? A raging brooch. Later that night, Tigger bounced back and forth across the kitchen, licking a wooden spoon he had dipped in Kanga's extract of malt. It was sweet and thick and stuck to his tongue in a delightful way. What have I told you about sneaking into Roo's medicine? Kanga appeared in the doorway, looking very angry and very tired. Oh, not Mrs. Kanga. You know, it's my most very favorite. I just couldn't resist. He bounced in place, still licking. I just couldn't resist. It's resist, you stupid idiot. And I don't care. It's Roo's medicine. She held out a paw. Now give it to me. Oh, no. What? Tigger bounce slowly came to a stop. Oh, no. Reluctantly, he handed over the saliva-slicked spoon and watched as Kanga slid it deep into her pouch. Hopping over to her pantry, she took the sticky jar of malt and slid that into her pouch as well. For safekeeping, she said, not breaking eye contact. Tigger's eyes ran down the length of Kanga's body, stopping to linger at her rotund punch. Furry and bulging with the jar of malt, he had never seen her quite like this, and his tail began to twitch. He felt like he wanted to bounce more than he had ever wanted to bounce before. And so he did, but he felt no relief. Heat formed between his hind legs, and before he knew it, his front tail had got sprung. He wanted to pull up, though, because he noticed that pouch was stuffed. Deep in the pouch she was wearing, he was hooked and he couldn't stop staring. He leaned forward and tried bouncing on his stiff front tail, but fell onto his face with an awkward thud. He'd never experienced Tigger Mortis in his front tail before. What are you doing? Kanga asked, a little grin playing on the corners of her mouth. You're going to wake Roo. I was just trying a different kind of bouncing, he explained, returning to his feet. His front tail stuck straight out from his belly, red and glistening. It was like a rocket bound for Mars, funded by a billionaire man baby, whose name sounds like a robot's perfume. If such a thing were to exist in the Hundred Acre Wood, of course. Well. Kanga moved towards him, eyes fixed on his new development. Do all Tiggers have two tails, or are you just happy to see me? Tigger's tail twitched, and he pushed a vase off the table for no apparent reason, other than some feline signal of affection. How come you bounce everyone but me? Kanga asked, brushing the broken bits of vase aside with her tail. It hurts my feelings. She batted her Kanga lashes. Well, I dare not bounce an orphan, Tigger replied. It wouldn't be properly. I'm not an orphan. Kanga slipped her paws into her pouch, pulling it open. But I am looking for a daddy. She leaned back wantonly against her supple tail, and Tigger gazed at its length in awe. He had never quite noticed its girth, its strength, its flexibility before. Much thicker than his own back tail, more solid. Imagine those bounces. His jaw went slack and his pupils enlarged like two black ink stains. All four paws on the ground, his hindquarters began to raise and shimmy back and forth, back and forth. His front paws low, his head fixed. His haunches were like a rubber band pulled tight, and in a moment he pounced, bounced, and then trounced. Awaiting Kanga, the flapper marsupium was pulled out like a hoop, expectant, and the full weight of Tigger entered her pouch like a sexy cannonball. Hashtag pouch stuff. Her tail held firm and supported the weight of them both as Tigger bore himself deep into her Kanga regions. A moan escaped her lips, and his muffled purrs vibrated against her all the way down her Kanga clit. After a moment, Tigger popped up from her flap, jar of malt and spoon in hand. An amber ribbon of malt slipped from the edge of the spoon, coating Kanga's nipples. They looked like an old pack of Rolos you found in your dad's glove compartment. His tongue nipped at her treacly mounds, the sandpaper roughness of it scraping against her. Springing out of her pouch, Tigger spun around, lifting his striped rear, his tail pointing out like an arrow. He looked back at Kanga, and with a twitch of his hips, his tail coiled into his bottom like a spring. The most wonderful thing about Tiggers, Tigger sang as his tail shot forward, the force of it tipping Kanga back further on her own tail. She raised her hind feet skyward and spread her haunches, ready to receive all 100 acres of his wood into her roof forest. His tail again returned to a coiled position and shot off once more like the handle of a pinball machine. This time his tail bounced right into Kanga's Rutang clan. Wow. Is that Tiggers are wonderful things? Yes, they are, Kanga joined in, singing through waves of pleasure as Tigger's tail worked her like a jackhammer. They're bouncy, boing, trouncy, boing, flouncy, boing, pouncy, boing. They'll make you come, 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 come. As Tigger sang, Kanga did just that. Her pouch contracting, her tail quivering. They collapsed into a spent heap of tail, fur, and malt. The most wonderful thing about Tiggers is, he finished, but Kanga interrupted. Is that Tigger better not be done? The end.
And that was Tigger, as written by Sarah Manolis.
Who you also might recognize from Behind the Bar. Hey, that was Winnie the Pooh. I can't wait to actually hear the stories. Thanks for listening, you guys. You can find us on Facebook for updates about the show. We're just Shipwreck SF basically everywhere. Tickets for all shows are for sale in advance. We're here the first Thursday of every month at the Booksmith in San Francisco in the Upper Haight, where we do this whole thing live for $12 with an open bar. It's the best deal in town. You can catch us there. You can catch us on Twitter. You can catch us on Facebook. What am I missing?
That's it.
That's it.
All right, confession time. When I was 5 and like would watch the Winnie the Pooh movies, I had a big crush on Christopher Robin. I was just like, yeah, those tiny shorts. Let's go explore those woods, baby. I was such a horny 5-year-old. Back in Mexico.